This is Melting Titanium number 32, recorded on November 17th, copyright 2009, New Grandview Incorporated, all rights reserved. We're starting at 6.03 p.m. Hawaii time. Greetings, Zion.
Good evening and welcome to Melting Titanium with the Stairway to Heaven, and everything's coming up roses on your bright and cheery pathway to hell.
Yes, for the last resort. We are the last resort.
For the last resort. That's exactly correct. I want to welcome everybody. We don't engage daylight savings time or otherwise, so everyone will pick up on it and you'll start hearing things in your head and or responding. There'll be a bit of tension and quandary of wondering where some of these pressures are coming from because you're coming up on your new moon. That's a beginning place. I want to welcome everybody as they sojourn their way to take their seats or their chairs or their stands or whatever they want to be. And we want to invite our dear, wonderful guest, host, Bob and Carolyn.
Thank you.
You're always too much fun and kind of make the boat float these days. They drag non-physical along most everywhere they go, so.
I like the way Ion has become major host now. We're just co-hosts.
Indeed, it's the only way to fly. It's the only way to fly. But welcome, welcome, and we're very, very pleased and excited to begin. There's been quite a bit of spew from the listening audience that folks seem to be resonating with this non-physical. Not necessarily us. It doesn't have to be us. It's any non-physical. Your non-physical is the one we're actually concerned with because an ancillary non-physical doesn't seem to help you very much. It doesn't serve you very well because then you've got to go that through the sieve of your mind to decide erratically if that's appropriate or inappropriate or okay or too karmatic or too dogmatic or all those other issues that sort of dance along with that. But just be easy with all of it as you're becoming into your place of knowing.
Ion, can I interrupt and ask you to define ancillary non-physical?
Us, we would be an ancillary version of non-physical.
Uh-huh.
And you have your own non-physical. But if chatting with an ancillary version of non-physical embraces your non-physical, that's a home run, or at least an RBI every single time. If you run that way, then it becomes very easy. But the point of this participation is to get to practice and play in your ESP world to activate your spiritual gifts. Not Ion spiritual gifts, your very own spiritual gifts. So they would be an appendage of you. Now, yes, we are the same non-physical that is you, but it doesn't matter until it becomes in your own beingness. It's just vain words, it's just words flowing until you have a resonance with it. And then the ancillary version of that application sometimes can peak up the tune-up, spice up, make the otherwise bland very, very well seasoned. So it's a very delicious place. So, well, Bob, what do we do now?
Okay. You're very good at stirring up the spirit. Your opening remarks are always great. I appreciate them. That does warrant you to be the leader, at least in the first part.
Oh, my stars. Mm-hmm. We digress.
Yeah, you be the ancillary leader. I am the real leader. But
Of course. Okay. Just don't forget, it's really all about Carolyn. So
yeah.
As long as that's the case, we're good.
Well, that's what the TV show V is certainly pointing out.
Oh, yes. Anna. Sweet Anna to take over the world.
That's Carolyn's middle name, and she looks like Carolyn sometimes. Carolyn can make herself look like her.
No, Carolyn's hair's much prettier.
True. I mean, it's the android memes attempt to approximate Carolyn, but not being libelous, you know.
That's true. And also, that Anna on the TV seemed to be a bit short-waisted. More balanced.
You know, right now, Carolyn has her hair pushed up. It's just exactly the length of Anna on TV. So, Carolyn does it. It is the android meme trying to keep up. I mean, I've always said I've advocated Lockdown Bob Rule as a antecedent for lockdown Connie rule. So Ion agrees with that.
Of course.
Okay, so I had some interesting patterns. I learned a very interesting point last night, is that JW is not immediate.
There's testosterone in the basement.
Oh, yeah, no, that's for us. We're sorry,
folks. Bob was in one of those moments, and JW had left the building, and it was left Ion all to his own devices, and boy, we played like we've never played before. And we don't know how much nonsensical applications apply, but they certainly were thoroughly engaged.
Well, you want me to say what you said was we were...
No, you don't have to.
Okay, mate, you be the center. You're the... Okay. No.
Redact.
What a great fun. And this way you'll know what we mean when we trail physical to don't make such a big do out of everything. Well, we're the poster child for it.
Yes, but you wouldn't let me go. Wouldn't let me flow into it.
Well, you're beginning, so everybody's starting to play. They're all awake now, so begin to begin.
Okay, so it was interesting discussing how a medium is kind of like a specialist. He specializes in some aspect, usually a concept of time, and so that's erroneous. And then I pointed out that JW is not a medium. I don't know if he would say he's probably psychic, but he's not a medium.
Well, you're all psychic, Bob.
That doesn't mean anything. What Ion is saying is that JW has learned to manifest as non-physical so they can emit from him verbally. That's the accomplishment here. So if anybody has any questions out there about what the difference of the medium is, the medium phenomenon versus, what do we call this, manifesting non-physical?
What would I extra large?
That's what?
Extra large.
Yeah, that's why you call yourself. It's not a medium. He's a large. JW.
Extra large.
JW is extra large. And just for those, we get extra large tomorrow on cash flow. We're going to start going to, it looks like, a two-hour show. It gives the extra large to unwind and spread his admittance. Its admittance over a longer stretch and not be aborted after 55 minutes.
That was Bob's manifestation, but it was JW's wanting and desire, because it's as though it was just getting warmed up in it within an hour. Even in your Melting Titanium shows, which is an hour, ends up being an hour and a half, 2 hours at the very best, just because that's when the girth starts to come from the activation from the individual human creators with their non-physical. So, look, instantaneous manifestation, well, that's Bob's process. Three. You want 2 hour show, so I end up bitch and complain and just getting started. And then Bob handles this in a three mode. Nah, we're not gonna have no 2 hour cash flow. That's just silliness. What are you talking about? Lost your head and mind, get over this mess, that's craziness. And we're starting earlier and all this kind of stuff, so I gotta get up earlier and wait a minute, I ain't having all this business. Sometimes I start before I go to bed the first time and wait a minute, we're not going this, and then the next week, bam, 2 hours, here we go.
I fade them out every time. I'm the only guy on the planet who fade out source or whatever that is.
Undo creation.
That's pretty good. Bob undoes creation.
Bob undoes creation because he doesn't know and he doesn't care. So it worked out that way.
And don't try it at home or anywhere. Don't try it.
Well, indeed. Leave it to a seasoned professional at the very same
We're willing to offer courses and workshops in it, but that's
yes,
later.
Indeed. Yes,
so,
indeed.
So I had a nice pattern today at the beach. I went by myself. Always refreshing to be at the beach. On session 31, just reviewing it, Ion mentions that I regard being a Maui a utopia, but someone who doesn't like beaches wouldn't regard this a utopia. And then Ion mentioned that...
But there's more there than just the beach. It's pretty miserable weather, too, isn't it?
Yes, yes. So, anyways, you were just being kind to the colleague who was listening with us at the time. But anyways, the point Ion said was Bob likes to feel his feet walk across sand. And then I thought about that, and it was months later Ion pointed out that Bob gets special energy from the sand in his feet, the silicon or something. Silica or whatever. Is it silicon? To the cup. And so I thought, well, there's ion.
There's ion in there, but then they'd make it slippery. That's what you do your breast enhancements with, the silicone.
So it's just an interesting point that ion 31 pointed out by relationship, my feet to the sand, and then commented on it many sessions later, in particular for me, but I already knew that was the case in the previous
session
31. Okay, so on the way to the beach, I was deciding that my chart, which features LaRouche, McLuhan, Thompson, and Croker, that Finnegan's Wake is the first expression of the process of tactility in writing form. Then I thought the modern Android meme is a replay of Finnegan's Wake, and then I thought there's four different manifestations of tactility. There's the LaRouche's philosophy is a scientific version of tactile approach to inventions. McLuhan had the tactile approach to communication media. William Aaron Thompson had the tactile approach to mysticism and Buddhism. And Arthur Croker had the tactile response to the chip body. The point was, I realized my position, the fifth position on the chart, was post-tactile and was post-contrast. And I realized that's what all my stuff has been saying in predicting ion. Because ion is saying that we will not avoid tactile contrast here, but the more we align our physical with the non-physical, we approach, almost like an asymptote on a graph, we approach the non-contrasting. We play it down, or it's played with. It's not a big deal. So we're actually post-tactile. That was a big insight for me, Ion, so in retrospect, myself, about my own pattern of the past 30 years. So, Ion, you have a question about that for me?
No.
Okay, so what do you think of that? The tactile is contrast, and life is tactile, but the more aligned with the non-physical.
Well, now, wait a second. Hold on. Easy there, Trigger. Life is not contrast. Within life, there can be contrasting experiences, but life itself is not. You're trying to achieve life. It's bliss. And the more bliss you get to, sometimes the faster is by vis-a-vis a contrasting experience. But you can't lay it in there to say that life is contrast, because it's just not. Because otherwise, what's the point?
Well,
if life was just contrast, and it's kind of like, well, you know, eat right, live right, do right, and die anyway, well, what's the point?
Okay. Tactility to me is what ion means, that we come forth in the physical and create or mix it up. That non-physical can't do. And you access bliss and the non-physical, which is the realm of the non-tactile, no resistance, no contrast, the more it's closer to in the separation of you and you, you move into a slightly post-tactile, not so contrast.
That's your book you're working on, book three, On Earth as It Is in Heaven. That's what that's about. That's how you usher the kingdom in your physical, right here, right now. You don't have to croak to come to that place of contrastlessness.
That's right, contrastlessness.
Lessness.
Less Elliot Ness. From the Untouchables.
Last Elliot Ness, yes, Untouchables.
What? Untouchables, yes.
Untouchables.
Well, there it is. Tactility involves touch. So the untouchable between you and you becomes a living resonance in the relationship of your being in life, which is the realm of creativity and friction and contrast and bliss. The tactile means the relationship between contrast and bliss in various proportions.
Degrees. Now, we've done a section on this already. You call it the degrees of separation.
Yes, the 6 degrees of separation.
That's an example of that placeholder.
The degrees of separation is another term for the dialectic of tactility, which is the interplay of life and contrast, or life contrast within life. But nobody experiences just contrast.
Well, now, hang on now. Yes, they can.
Oh, they can.
Do they? Absolutely.
Well, they might get off on it.
Well, some people get cancer so they can be a survivor.
Yeah. They get bliss out of that.
But that's contrast, you see. But then they laud in the benefit of the overcoming of it. Oh, but then it's in remission. Okay, wonderful. It's back. Oh, it's back.
isn't that you get yourself in a dislocation or disconnection that is your fastest path to joy to get stung so that you can overcome it. That's a path to joy. It can be just poking, and then you get the consequences, which were not your path.
Yes, okay, that's right. There's not one word wrong with what you said. Not one word. They were perfect words. But when you start applying those perfect words to every single time without fail or exception, you have to say, wait a minute. Sometimes you can find examples outside of your perfect words. So therefore, you have to give that duality of the pitch line of how it adjusts, okay? Because it's got to work every single time without fail or exception. Otherwise, it may not apply at all.
That's right, and that's what I mean by tactile. That's the very contrast within experience here in itself, that nothing you establish is permanent. It erases.
Well, the only thing permanent is the change.
Is the change and the non-physical.
Yes.
Are the Cardinals listening tonight? Did they tune in?
They are.
Any results? Did they spread the word or keep it to themselves since last week?
It's mostly amongst themselves. But see, in their world, everything is coming into plausible question. Answers will be questioned.
Why don't we see if there's any questions in the audience? If there's anything they want to talk about, because you went on last week, a whole spiel, very good spiel. Everybody was digging it. Maybe there's some buildup of questions from the last few sessions.
Go a little further.
It's still developing.
What we would say is, no, Bob, there's no questions this red hot second.
Okay.
But there are being developed. They're just trying to calculate how far they can go. As you see, this is not new. This is old as old as old. How old is old? Old is pretty old. Well, ESP's been around forever. But until you just come into the place of experiencing it, sometimes it sends you into a conundrum. You had a reading not long ago with one that was taking astral projection and leaving the physical body and finding contrast within their body, so much so that they were asking non-physical what was the problem symptomatic that would cause this panicky uneasiness of strain within the meat sack body. And once we explained what it was, then they go, oh, and then no more problem, you see.
Yeah.
It solved it. But you can take the solution and turn that into a symptomatic issue that goes, uh-oh, something's wrong. Oh, no, there's a lump. Oh, no, get the chainsaw. Cut it out before it takes over me, you see. But once you understand that it's not, then you go, oh, okay, good. No problem. Never mind. Next. You know, what's next?
I read a definition of the golden mean as similar to the Thomas Aquinas' doctrine of the proportions of analogies among analogies, or the ratio, the analogical ratios of proportions among proportions might be a better way to say it, similar to the Zen Buddhist interval. And that's what I mean by tactility. So the golden mean, why is that pattern in nature? We impose it on there, but isn't it showing the resonant interval? The golden mean?
Sometimes we superimpose it. Sometimes we try to make that answer fit. You discuss it. Your physicists have problems putting square pegs in round holes. Mm. Certainly can be done, but the issue that there's a difference or a differential that does not apply or work, and then your quandary is how to make it fit. That's the issue. And if you're doing that, then hang on.
So superimposition is taking a pattern and applying it too far and wide, swallowing, making everything fit that one size or one pattern.
Trying to.
This seems to be the case of Dan Winter, who has a very interesting mind in terms of the collapse of the scientific certainties, and then he mixes up all these disciplines from symbolism to the geometric mean to astrophysics to genetics, and it becomes a one-way situation.
Well, no, it's an only way situation.
Yes, an only
That's
way.
That's the problem. See, it doesn't fit every single time. So therefore, if it doesn't work every single time without fail or exception, when does it work? That's our issue.
The labyrinth of the mind requires images, likes to work with images or rules. It's always going to be there, and it's allowing oneself to allow things that don't fit into what your rules have established is the trick for getting more.
Yes, and your rule in that percentage of reality is that you will not allow yourself to usurp your very own rules. See, that's the kicker. That's what will bite you in the butt. It's not the problem with non-physical. It's not God up in the heavens that's denying you. It's you denying you. But you make all these rules and regulations of which is less than and which is more than, and then regardless of how your situation changes, your labyrinth of your mind won't allow you to undo your own rules and regulations. You've heard the phraseality of you are your own worst enemy? Well, that's where that comes from.
We come into this world to mix it up with that understanding that we are our own worst enemy. That's the game we play.
Well, we'd wish not, but it seems that you enjoy it, so that's where you linger.
Isn't non-physical, even though it has the final say, because we go into the non-physical.
You are the non-physical. You just dropped the meat sack. See, that's a good, Bob. This is perfect words. You're getting this. You're getting it. It's perfect. See, you're saying you transition to non-physical. No, you have non-physical before you get here.
Right.
So, and that's the eternal part. So it's the ongoing process. This is just the toddler stage when you're learning, you're crawling around or rolling around, and then something attaches in the back of your neck, and then all of a sudden you can walk. Well, until that bone fuses, you will not walk. But then you come along, and then everything's okay because you can walk. Well, then you go through the next stage and phase, but you have non-physical all the way through. You just gain a meat sack, and then you forfeit a meat sack. Kind of like good digestion. You enjoy it, and then you pass it away. You enjoy it, and then you pass it away. So your body in your meat sack gives you the perfect example. You don't get excited when your bowels move any more than you should get excited when you transition and drop the physical meat sack body.
So I was saying that while we have the physical, non-physical is sort of one-third of the relationship between the physical, non-physical, and labyrinth of the mind.
Correct, yeah.
Close. And so that's the interesting game that's played in the physical is there's a temporary...
300% or 300 divided by 1, you still get the 3. But it's a representation of 1. So, good.
Well, wait, you said 300 divided by 1, that's 300.
No. I said it is the same way that you could, if you have a 300 over 1 human, it's still one being. But it's not a third, a third, a third. It's 100%, 100%, 100%. It makes one.
It's 100% labyrinth of the mind, 100% physical, 100% non-physical.
Yes.
That's interesting.
And if your friend would embrace that in his equation, he might come way closer to making his applicable formulary to be every single time without fail or exception.
So,
if that were the case, but that's not where it is now. But if the day is young, there's time. It's okay.
Yeah, there's fake time.
Well, it's his creation, so he's working on it. It's all right.
Yeah, you're talking about Dan Winter.
Well, specifically, yeah.
Yes.
But we're trying to be easy with
it. Yeah, now, what's interesting, I said one-third... In one-third, one-third, one-third. Well, what was the total? That was the mistake. The point
one.
Is each one of these things are a total. They're 100% labyrinth, 100% non-physical.
And 300 of those make one.
Right.
That's what the Spartans ran into, wasn't it, with 300?
Oh, yeah. What, you mean it was at that movie a couple of years ago?
No, we're talking about the real battle, not the show battle, the real battle. Oh, wait, we may have gotten a little behind you. Sorry.
Yeah. No, you're referring...
Where they were in a channeled... Now, wait a second. You've got something going on here. Let's just play with this a minute. You had a group of people who were in... millions fighting against them to take over everything. And they were in a channeled focal point between two big bluffs of rock. And they were fighting as one. There were 300 of them. But they were as one. And they all transitioned, okay? But they went down in the annals of history. They're still talking about today, making going to the Bijou Theater and watching movies regarding it. They're still talking about it. That's a hell of a battle that you can have, you know, many, 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 many hundreds of years later, and they're still chit-chatting about it. It hadn't been done since.
And how many did the 300 kill before they transitioned?
Many millions, if you recall.
Millions?
Oh, yeah.
Well, how long did it go on? Like 2 weeks? Or?
Oh, it was longer than that.
Oh, I see.
This battle went on for some time.
I see.
Because back in those days, so you didn't fight at night. You rested at night. So you
could
fight during the day. Then turn out the light, and then there wasn't any more killing. And then wake up the next morning. What are we going to do today, Pinky? Well, same thing we do every day. We're going to take over the world. Okay, let's go. Let's start. So it was like this, but they literally built a wall out of the bones of those they had slain. So it had to be longer. They didn't have time to carve the meat off of the bones. So there was a span in there so the meat had time to rot away.
What's the name of the movie battle? I forget it.
300.
Just 300. Oh, that's the movie, 300. Okay. Now, that's interesting. Got 300 full-on...
based on Spartacus.
Beg your pardon?
On Spartacus and the Spartans.
You mean the 300 were Spartans?
Yes, from Spartacus, their leader.
So you're saying the number 300 resonates with having 300%.
Yes, good.
Yes.
Instead of a third, a third, and a third, it's 300. It's 100, 100, 100.
So did they tap in to their full potential?
They certainly did. They knew they were warriors. They knew they could do it. There was never a question, well, if we live or if we die, we're fighters who fight. So we're going to fight. Make any difference. We die, we die. You know, it's like, oh, we have to save our teeth. Well, don't worry, they're going to fall out anyway. So if you're a brusher who brushes, just continue brushing. You're all right.
They were souls that came in. And they had no fear of transition.
No. It was glorious to transition. They died with their boots on.
So as more and more people tune into the thinning of the veil and have no fear of transition, then they can come back and participate in the physical with more ferocity, and you might have more of those kind of battles as a game.
Sure.
You know what I mean? As an intensity. As a joke, almost. Let's just have a game and see what we can do. Doesn't matter if we get killed. That would be something that's on the horizon. More crazy, extreme presentation.
That's not crazy. That's normal. That's normal.
Well, compared to that energy, then people in today's society, its majority look like slaves.
Well, that's deflated. What they call themselves.
Who called themselves that? The Spartans or today?
Today. And they blamed the white man for slavery, but wasn't it a white man that released them all?
Wow. Well, they would say the white man created the disease and then offered the cure. It was a rigged game.
Mm-hmm.
You mean Lincoln freed them as a white man. So are we getting any questions surfacing yet?
Yes, they want to know if it's true that Mary Todd Lincoln was institutionalized in an insane asylum. And the answer is, yes, she was.
That brings up I won't bring up that. Okay, so she was institutionalized. I didn't know. Is this in the regular history books?
No.
But why would... I mean after he passed on?
Yes.
Because she had no protection, social protection?
No, never. No. It was that never quenching. She didn't care about all that. It was okay. She had a life. But when she lost her son, it sent her into this spiral of just unconnection. She got more in tune with the spirit world than she got in the physical world. Well, back in those days, if you weren't a teetotaler, then you had to have a good excuse for not having your senses about you. So when you left that world, then it was one of her other children that finally had to put her in the same asylum.
Her son passed on before Abraham passed on?
Oh, yes, as a child.
Oh, okay. So she was psychic and developed those abilities, spiritual gifts, and Lincoln used that. But after that, another child didn't understand.
It wasn't understanding. She's gotten further detached from her physical.
How would she express that? Not get up in the morning or something like
that? No, running, screaming without her clothes on up and down the hallways.
Of her home?
Yes.
Was that partly because Abraham Lincoln had transitioned? That was another shock.
Not at all.
More her son.
You've got to realize in those days, when you get the seat of the presidency, you kind of put the bullseye on your front and your back. See, you got to realize people didn't live old in those days. You know, if you hit 30, it was a full life. Literally.
So why was she screaming?
She got more and more detached from the physical. It was more comfortable being outside of what society said was appropriate. And she got to the point where she didn't care. And the question was actually from a Mary, but no relation, but it was, her name is Mary. And she was like, that just jumped in of, was she or was she not institutionalized? The answer is yes, she was.
Mary asked that, but the...
In Ithaca, New York. That's where she was institutionalized.
So Mary Todd Lincoln, was she tapping into her non-physical or was it unbalanced?
We say it was perfect, a perfect unfolding. But those around her would say she was card-carrying crazy and they were in fear that she might hurt herself. So therefore, you know, institutionalization became the fastest of their joy. Well, she was so far out of it at that point, she really didn't know or care. Now, she amended that. They did some of Carolyn Wright's blogs about some of the crazy treatments they do.
Mm.
Well, it really was crazy back then, but they got numbed down from sensory-wise to where she realized that she could maintain a certain decorum, then they'd let her out of the nut house. And she didn't want to be in the nut house. She didn't much care, but it was a propensity of, okay, I'll comply.
And she did. She did get out.
Of course.
How many...
3 years.
3 years she was... how many years past Abraham did she live? 3 years?
No. It took her 3 years to get out of the nut house. It was about another... Well, it might be in dog years, so don't hold us.
Right.
It was about another 17 to 20 years.
Was she a public figure always?
Never. Not even in the White House was she public.
But I mean, like, people weren't interested in her.
They were very interested in her, but she would not have it. There were many grand state dinners that she didn't even show up to.
I might agree with that. She wasn't making a big deal out of government.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, now you got to realize in those days, any citizen could go to the White House and open the front door and walk in. You didn't have to have an appointment. You just walked in. So it was almost like living in an open public building.
I'm trying to figure out why was she screaming, though. Was she in terror? Was she...
She had to be outside of herself, and that screaming motion reminded her that she was in physical, that she was slipping more and more. She was much, gave her undivided attention to non-physical. So therefore, after a little while, guess what happens? She had to rouse herself. It's kind of like pinch me to see if I'm dreaming, and then somebody pinches you and you slap them because they pinched you.
Was she traveling to parallel worlds? Is that what you mean?
No.
What was she doing as she got in touch with the spirit? Was she astral projecting seeing spirits?
Just giving it her undivided attention consistently.
And what would be the content of her experience as she gave it attention?
She found that she was enjoying more and more and more not being invisible.
What would be the content of her experience when she's not in, thinking she's not in the physical?
The cares of life grew so strangely dim that she would be outside of herself, and then she couldn't be outside of herself because she didn't want to just give up creating. So then she had to start having these screaming sessions, hollering, yelling, wailing, to remind herself that she was in physical. Well, when you do that in public forums or even within your family, they'll have you committed?
What was the content of her experience when she wasn't screaming and she was lost in the non-physical?
It's catatonic.
She's just staring into space.
Yeah.
How did she feel that? Did she feel pain?
Happy.
Happy. Okay. Like she wouldn't eat for hours, kind of thing?
Or days.
Is that what McClellan was doing when he'd have this sort of seizure in his class and he'd freeze and have his arm point up like a Nazi salute and he'd be frozen there for 10 minutes? Was he doing...
No, it'll be easy. We'll honor, all glory, Lord, and honor, Marshall, in his place of wonderful beingness. That was no other than puffery.
He did it on purpose.
Oh, yes, it was puffery to get their attention.
It's something like I do.
Well, of course. Yeah. Only you'd have Shania Twain playing in the background as you're dancing your clothes off.
Look at that, Carolyn. Carolyn's looking at the plastic box. She's always looking and twiddling about moving her fingers over the plastic box.
Yeah, she likes her plastic.
She's like Mary Todd Lincoln, lost in another world, catatonically staring at the
screen. But her plastic box, sometimes money checks fall out of it.
Oh, yeah, that's very useful for Carolyn.
Yeah.
Okay, so... are you reading something, you know, studying? She didn't want to comment. She's being indifferent. So, Hyon, what's the next question? We answered that detail.
There you go. Very good. Let's see. Here's the question, and we'll do a direct quote. And you might call the censors, but we'll try to soften it a little bit. What in the hell is Sarah Palin think she's doing?
Sarah Palin believes in her blooming world.
Apart.
She believes that there's a country, the United States of America, and that it's defined by its natural borders and it's up against the rest of the world and needs to defend its precious history. It's a degree of naivety, it would seem to me, to think that the United States is a valuable entity in relation to the global situation, the globalized economy. It's like someone who's being isolated, is an isolated person up in Alaska, doesn't know what's going on in the regular flow of the global economy. So she actually has a sincere belief in preserving the image she has of the United States. The government is so obsolete that you have to be someone, quote, naive, unquote, as Sarah Palin, who will fulfill these silly government functions. It's like Special Olympics now. Its government is special government. Special Olympics. They're only the retarded people.
Carolyn, just for the record, that was Bob. That was not Ion. That tactile statement.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, it's really, elections are like Special Olympics. We know most citizens would avoid serving and wouldn't even want to be the president.
Oh, no, no. If that's the case, the questioners want to know what in the world is going on.
Okay.
You're the governor of a state. Okay? Now, that's better than being a senator or a congressman, because there are only 50 governors. And actually, governors have a little more pull and clout within the Commonwealth than, say, a representative of the House of Representatives or the Senate. They actually have more pull and power. She has an unsuccessful vying for the vice presidency. Then she takes a little heat and this, that, and the other, and finds out that she's actually human and gets, you know, her flatulence on the media. They call that vetting. She has this process that she goes through. So then she goes home, resigns as governor, and then writes a tell-all book about all this stuff. And the questioner is what in the hell is she doing? She could write her book and still be governor. Why you got to resign just because you didn't get your way? Well, it wasn't exactly like that. But the question is, how do you get there from there? And if you are sitting governor, why do you resign? I mean, why wouldn't you make them impeach you?
Okay, so, Ion, would you tell us what's going on?
It's quite an anomaly for us, too, because she's still in the process of this contrasting experience of why couldn't you go at it that way. But now look at it, she's a number one best-selling author before the book ever comes out tomorrow. And she's already number one, and the book didn't even come out until tomorrow. train Preserving America, Saving America, why wouldn't you keep your seat as the governor of a full-blown state, which, by the way, is pretty flush when it comes in the money business because of all the oil that flows out of there from your Trans-Alaska pipeline, so much so that instead of paying taxes, if you're a citizen of Alaska, they pay you $1,000 to come and live there. How about them smackers? You don't pay state tax up there, they pay you to be there.
But see, she's capitalizing on the real politics, which is the media celebrity world. And she qualifies because she has the experience that some people are fascinated by. So you capitalize on the book. And you pretend you're a politician, but the real thing is celebrating your life through the book. That's what she's doing. You may not think she's doing that.
No, no, we agree. And that's good, because that's actually a better answer than we would have given. So from physical to physical, very good, Bob. And of course, we would defer and say, ask her what the hell she's doing. But your version of that reality stands as clear as what we would have to say regarding it in non-physical. So good.
My initial reaction is I would never read the book. I'm not interested. I would think most people aren't. But it shows you that people, intelligent people, don't care about politics, but they're fascinated about hearing someone who was ripped over the coals. It's what I call the economy being run on abuse value. We want to hear the latest abuse victim, you know, went through the celebrity machine, and we want to read about it.
Yeah.
So that's what she's doing. And I read a few quotes of her interview with Barbara Walters. Either it was typed wrong, but she doesn't even say her words correctly in traditional grammar.
Now,
she's young. You know, she didn't go through rigorous education of the 50s and 60s, which made people a little more literate. So she comes a little later, and that may be acceptable. But it is striking how she certainly is an example of how one makes it today. You put yourself in the ringer, and then you write about it, make a movie, and you don't need to be governor. You can have more money from that than being governor. Why be a bureaucrat?
Well, okay, but then when your beginning statement, when you're drawing the parallel of how she perceives America having value and we can do these things and keep going, it's kind of like you make it, and then you abdicate your position to make a little money. There's nothing wrong with the resource flowing freely and easily to you, but why would you not stay as, well, her excuse would be that it was a lame duck administration, and that everything she did raised another ethics charge and an ethics violation, because of course since all this microcosm of the spotlight went on her, they sent their insiders of trouble so that any word she said, they were filing suit regarding it. So it was actually a pressurized version to push her out of the way of office, is what really happened. But the dynamic of it is that just the expose factor, after about 2.3 seconds, it just became a good skit for Saturday Night Live. And if that's the case, why in the world would you want to then go expose your genitalia one more time? It's kind of like, well, that was about as much fun as a stick in the eye. Gosh, let's try it a little bit more. Now let's go a little deeper. And if you didn't like your handlers in the campaign, and you throw yourself out in front of Katie Couric and Hoda Kotb and Brokaw, and oh wait, no, he's dead.
And that Tina.
Tina Fey, that's the comedy thing. But the Barbara Walters, let me tell you, Barbara Walters will rip you a new one if you give her 2.3 seconds. That sister's been around long enough to know how the milk got in the coconut.
Her father was rumored to be part of the New York Mafia or had dealings with them in New York City, so she grew up in the tough New York world.
Yes.
And you would agree with that, Ion?
Yes. Well, actually, he was from Jersey.
Sarah Palin is talking about a country, and she seems oblivious to the media game she's playing.
Playing in, too.
Well, how about this? She thinks the country is bigger. That would be the chemical body country, is bigger than the TV body landscape. But it's actually the TV landscape that's making her get all the money. And she doesn't know that TV landscape goes beyond the borders of the United States and therefore undermines the chemical body borders. That contradiction she's dumb on.
Now, we are especially fond of the comedian Wanda Sykes, but now you've got a couple of, this all hit at the same time. There's a couple of fellas who had seen some of her shows and specials and things, and she does a comedic bit on her stand-up routine where she is a lesbian, which is perfectly all right. It's all right with non-physical. But
who, Wanda or the others?
Wanda is Wanda is her Wanda's wife. They've adopted some children. And she comes in, and they're limiting the children's television. You know, they're young. Well, Wanda's like, what's wrong with television? And he says, no, we have to limit the television. You know, it's not a babysitter. You don't just turn on the TV and let the baby sit there and that kind of stuff. Or you'd be watching TV while you're feeding the baby or something like that. And, of course, Wanda's like, damn. That TV is what the milk in the bottle is baby's eating. There ain't nothing wrong with TV. TV's what pays for things around here. We need to get a bunch of TVs. TVs is what made what we got here now. And it's very, very, very comical to point out that you're trying to limit the thing that's making you a living.
That's exactly what I was trying to say.
Yes.
In Sarah Palin's case. The person who asked the question, what's up with Sarah Palin? I think we've explained how it's a very logical progression for someone who here.
It flowed out of the Mary Todd thing from that first lady to presidency.
Right. Here's the thing. Was TV such a big factor in Alaska that because she was seen as an embarrassment by maybe Obama-connected people in Alaska, the Democrats, that they saw the opportunity to take over?
No, never. No. That handwriting was on the wall. See, the Republican represented the old regime, and everybody had gotten themselves what you call in that the tethers of bankruptcy. So the status quo was what screwed everything up. So you had to have the Reform Party to come along to be something different. Now, different isn't any better than what you got going on right now, okay? But it's different, and that's how it was seen, you see.
So the old gang that Sarah represented in the Republican Party was weak, as the Republicans all around were weak.
They weren't weak. They weren't even playing anymore. And the reason everything changed from Republican to Democrat is because the Republicans didn't even run. Seek re-election.
So that would be another thing. Sarah is a little smart on that level, and knows it's over for the Republican purse strings and knew others were quitting. Did she ever figure out even that John McCain wanted to lose? No, didn't figure that out.
Well,
are you going because you do not want to say something?
Right.
Okay,
right,
you're
right.
Censoring yourself.
But the thing is,
one could say that she got hip to the process and resigned from the Republican nexus herself, like all the other Republicans did.
When they got tired of using her beautiful skirts they provided for her, and it got real easy, it's kind of like, well, you know what? If I'm going to be a whore, I'm going to get paid.
And you do that by doing a book.
Or whatever, yeah.
And she's leaving it vague, like she's saying, well, I might run for president, I might not, because that's a puny thing. McClellan used to say, you don't want to arrive. When a young person arrives with success, then they're old hat. You have to be someone climbing up the ladder and with all kinds of options available. Then people are fascinated by you. That happened to Obama. He finally got someplace, and then support him.
Well, but then it's kind of like, where does Oprah go from here?
Well, if they knew us, they'd know that we got a greater, more wide-ranging platform here with ION and non-physical. We can't stop, no matter how much success we get.
Sure.
You're subdued there, sure. No, really, it's limited if you specialize in being a TV star or a movie star or a politician.
What if they call it typecasting? If you ever get the wrong role, then you're eternally that Ethan Lane, which is a wonderful actor, but he played a couple of homosexual roles, and then eternally he was known as the homosexual, and we think he's normal. Wait, that's the wrong word. We think he's heterosexual, but because he was typecast in that genre, it's very, 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 very difficult then to get out of that, to get a role where you're not seen as that. And so it's John Wayne version of typecasting. He wouldn't do movies that didn't make him be the big bad winner of the battle with his big hat, you see.
The thing is that if you're Oprah Winfrey and you go, what next? If you don't have something like Non-Physical to play with or Ion, and have Ion be public, which creates whole new ranges of communication with people. It expands the potential of interaction with a larger context, a large, not a medium, but
yes,
just a TV medium. So then they would latch on to Ion just to be associated with something larger, which would actually give them a role more than they can imagine now.
Yeah, Mike Douglas was successful, but where is he now?
I don't even know if he transitioned.
No, here's one you'll have fun with. Phil Donahue. There you go.
Okay.
The Phil Donahue Show.
Tell us about him.
Oh, you remember Phil Donahue. That was back in your day.
Yeah, the 70s and 80s.
That was the first talk show.
You realize that we're soon be saying that's back in the naughty knots. We're just going into the second decade of the 20th century in a few minutes.
In a few minutes.
Still, it's 30 years ago. That's like, you know, in the 1960s, someone brought up Charlie Chaplin. It's interesting how we don't. Now, here's the time factor. McLuhan wrote in the 60s that people of his generation grew up in the 20s and 30s were shocked when TV came along and they actually started to see footage of their lives in the 20s and 30s because it wasn't that available when there was just a movie environment. Just go and see a movie. You couldn't see the movie again. And where many movies happened in the 20s and 30s, they forgot them. The TV was able to retrieve them. And so McLuhan said people were shocked at how much they'd forgotten about their lives in media diet.
Al Valentino, Buster Krabs, our favorite Little Mary Pickford.
Yeah.
Hatchin's Plaything. That was in the silence. Shirley Temple.
So it all came back with television. We would see that in the 60s, 70s, and that seemed like a long way away. But when you today see footage of the Beatles, I don't know what it is for a 10-year-old, but I just have the feeling it doesn't seem that far away because the instant replay has made things be replayed more and more. The TV News needs new contents and feeds on the past. So we have a less of a sense of distance as we used to think the 60s were in relation to the 20s. From this decade back to the 70s, it's not so far ago.
Well, so much that you had the original, like the Series V. You had the original Series V. It came out in the 70s. Mm-hmm. And now they're redoing the V, and it's the same storyline. Same plot, same deal.
I'm saying that the sense of a sequential linear view of time is diminished when everybody, you can say it becomes a larger relationship of time, a larger, fuller bottle of time, where back in the 60s, people would see these old footage, and they think it was a long time ago, and say, wow, I forgot that.
Right.
That's a linear sense of time, but time has been compressed by our very technology, which is leading to why people would think there is no time, or could begin to entertain that.
Yes, because how do you keep adding these voluminous volumes of things if you, the only reason that it's becoming so many nanobytes is because you never throw them away. Back in those days, once you took the trash out, it was over. Now you sort it and sift it and recycle it and reuse it and on 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 to such a point that you never get rid of anything, you see.
Yes, so sociologically, if you want to call it that, the idea of there's no time, they may not understand it in the way non-physical say, but the concept of no time in secular terms is more easily understandable.
Yes.
I think it was very interesting about the ankh, A-N-K-H.
They call it ankh.
Ankh, okay. What did I say, ankh?
Mm-hmm.
Ankh. We were on Curtis Davis' show last Friday, and I later pointed out the the role of the Ankh in the audience or in around Curtis. So I looked up his website and found that, yes, he's sponsored by the Per Ankh Camniversity, not University, Camniversity. I think it's a play on Egypt, and its original name, Kemet or something. Egypt. And so that the whole setting of Egypt.
Carmack? Yes.
You mean Johnny Carson?
No, Carmack is a geographic place in Egypt.
But wasn't the original Egypt called Kemet or something? Like Elkhart?
Yes. Carmack,
oh, okay. So I don't.
Yes.
They say that alchemy comes from Egypt, the Chem.
Originally.
But you're saying it's Carmack, not Chem.
Bob, those Egyptians didn't have letters.
Oh, okay.
They didn't have alphabet, so, you know, it's tomato, tomato. Mm. Well, they're spelled the same, so it's okay.
All right. So what was interesting, I went to the Per Ankh University, and they celebrate Egyptology. They think Egypt was a very advanced civilization, maybe better than us or something. And I probably wouldn't disagree with that.
Mm-hmm. You look at this entire country, and you have raised yourself from nothing. You're 200-plus few years old, and you became the superpower of the world and single-handedly destroyed yourself. So most people would say you're just a Johnny-come-lately.
I don't think Americans believe they've destroyed themselves yet.
Oh. Maybe we should say, oh. The first response was, oh.
Well, I guess around now they're starting to ponder a bit. It's taken a year.
Okay.
There's no, what? No problem in Chernobyl.
No problem in Russia, especially in Chernobyl.
I was wondering what Ion would say to Curtis and their Per Ankh devotees. What is their limitation in their view of Egypt? Even though they respect it and think it has something, what are they missing about it?
Well, nothing other than the dynamics that were laid forth that they're trying to magically imbue within themselves. They've got to get the Paul Harvey version of the story in order to get to the good parts.
They have to believe that the mysteries have to be, the occult have to be mysterious. And so they want to hear the other half of the story, the secret story.
The Paul Harvey version of the story.
Right. Now, Ion does explain the secret story and says there is that.
Yes.
But it's not the end all.
But if they knew the whole story, and they might lay that Ankh down.
So Egyptology, what it seems to be is that Ion says that particular now, because people didn't have the details of their chemical bodies created,
bill of particulars.
Yeah. Because they didn't have what writing and literature brought into our consciousness, kind of a limitation, they had less objection to the realms of experience.
I was fixing to say, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And we still say, yeah, 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 but there's another dynamic of whether to choose to give their undivided attention to it or not.
Who's they? Who are we referring to?
Who are you talking about?
The Egyptians, that they did not have limitations. That's the thing about primitive cultures, what we call primitive early civilization, is that they were not limited by the media clutter we have, and they had less definitions of where, in fact, they really were. But any idea that came along, they could get enthusiastic about and, quote, hallucinate on it and experience it.
Very good.
That's the difference.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed.
So what were you saying about that?
It's the dynamic of the process of now and then. You pick up the Ankh and make that be your vicissitude that you're going by. But if you get the rest of the story, you'd lay the Ankh down and move on to the more meatier aspects of your meme.
The difference between then and now is that we get more embedded in symbols.
Yes.
The symbols and the concepts became the reality more than the actual perceptual experience.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Any other questions?
Who's going to the Super Bowl?
Yeah, I don't know who's going.
Well, and we don't want to get too far. We don't want to set the off-track bettors awry. So it'll be interesting to see when they make the first cut of the playoff.
So we wait on that.
Yes, it might be patriotic.
You mean is the team called the Patriots? Yeah, so there's the hint right there, Patriots.
50-50 shot, so.
Right. Okay, so who do you think was the best hockey player that ever existed so far?
What do you mean so far?
There are some hockey players who are playing right now that we haven't heard of because those nows haven't
come out. John Lemming.
Who?
John Lemming.
Has he been in the spotlight?
We don't know. And you ask who's the best one of all time. It's John Lemming.
And who did he play for?
The Montreal Canadiens.
Canadiens.
Yeah.
And what position? And did he get the most goals? What was good about him?
Well, how do you judge a hockey player, Bob? It's how you, your position of goals and defense and lack of icing. And actually, most hockey lovers, they gauge the best players by who spreads the most blood on the ice.
Okay, so how do you spell Lemming? Is that L-E-M-I-N-G?
M-M-I-N-G.
Great. I'm going to give you a bunch of people. Gordie Howe, Bobby Hull, Bruce, or somebody, Bobby Orr, Sidney Crosby, there's four. Those are hockey players I know a bit about. Who does Ion admire the most?
All the same. Admiration is equal.
They all did their own center of the universe capitalization of their abilities.
Sure.
Well, we've never done athletes before, so.
Well, they just asked the question, and we were like, okay. And there were a few lottery questions, but it's 1-3-6-6 for your cash 4.
How about this question? Now, this may have to be redacted, but I will ask Ion someday this. Is the present George Bush Sr.,
Herbert?
Yeah, Herbert Walker, the father, the older guy, 80 years old or 85. Is he still in the physical?
Yes.
Okay. Because Chris Story is saying that he is gone. Good chance he's gone.
Good Lord have mercy.
Okay. So, if we look at the present, it's a wonderful recovery happening on Wall Street. Yet,
is it?
Yes, Mr. Rubini, R-O-U-B-I-N-I, I think his name is, professor at New York University, he's the one who predicted the crash last year. He said it's going to get worse.
Mm-hmm.
But not for everybody, I would say.
Right.
So he's speaking for some chunk of people who would believe that. Who won it?
Okay.
That part, how can our listeners not be affected by that?
High short.
And that would continue.
Well, you'd make money on the fall. But don't make too much money of it or they'll call you a terrorist and put you in the hooscow.
Does Arnold find it odd that Americans have those restrictions on their free enterprise and don't complain about them?
But they do complain about them, Bob. That's the whole point. We're so free, we can only do what you allow us to do.
So people are really disconnecting from the apparent slavery as much as possible. They're not having it as much as they cannot have it.
They've now come to the conclusion that it's their telephone and they pay for it monthly. They can decide if they want to answer it or not. And they figure, oh, it's my phone. If I don't want to answer it, I don't have to. Mm. You used to, if you had a phone, you had to answer the phone. And it was just this taboo thing. If you were home,
yeah,
the phone rings, you have to answer it. It's just, it's law.
It was. I remember people who would say, you were home, you heard the phone ring, you didn't answer it. They felt
my call.
That means people aren't in the same space. Not only there's no time sociologically, there's no space, no common space. You create your own space.
Right.
For what you're going to engage in. Nobody can... So there's a huge decentralization that happened with telephones.
Yes, indeed.
And was that the reason why we have the Patriot Bill? Because it's a complementary fear?
The Patriot Act?
Yeah. The complementary fear that there's too many people not answering their phone.
No. It's just so they can search and seize anything they want, any way they want, without even probable cause. That's what that's about.
That's a gang. That's
yeah.
a gang that took over and are acquiring. They're not even interested in the sociological effect of no space.
Right. Very good.
Okay. That was a good idea. Good pattern. Let's see. What is a book that Ion is aware of that's been written that may not be a bestseller in any way that you would recommend? That would be pretty interesting.
Well, we're a little bit biased and probably pretty partial, but That Kingdom Come was probably a really good choice.
Our book, yes.
Best one we can think of right off this red hot second.
That's probably true. Well, I don't think you've explained how you are different from a medium.
Medium is limited to the dynamic that they are perceived by. Remember, you looked at that defining definition
yes.
of a medium?
Yes.
And it was the level or degree of perception received by the individual. The individual asker, not the medium.
But that applies to Ion. The asker determines Ion's response.
No.
Oh.
No, wait now. You're ipso factoing just a little bit, and that's all right, because we like that well, but no. The point is that the medium is only limited to who is summoned or the dead, the recently
undead. Oh, I see.
The parameters that are, like a future terrestrial could not be described through a medium, because how would you validate it? And if you can't validate it, then it doesn't matter. So it's antimatter.
We can understand the spirit from the past because we think we know the past. But the past comes through a medium.
Okay.
But you're saying something in the future that we don't know could not come through in the case of a medium.
Yeah, okay.
Whereas
I'll come back to clean that up again another day, but
whereas,
that's okay for where you are.
Okay, whereas non-physical can describe, regardless of what JW knows, the future, the past, present, and more.
Yes.
That's the difference. So if you think of a medium, a person who channels some spirits, they enter him. It's like JW made himself a door, and they don't enter JW. They walk through JW and show up, manifest as a large.
Good.
You like that?
We do.
Well, I'm going to leave at the top. So that was a good image, so I think we'll...